So yesterday, began a four-day weekend for my wife and I, obviously with some church and stuff sprinkled in, but we decided a perfect time for us to start cleaning out the attic because nothing screams, he's risen, like allergies. And we're cleaning this all out. We're getting into the afternoon, or we're getting towards lunchtime, and I'm like, I'm not going to go make lunch for us or our toddler. Like, that's just not going to happen. Let's just go get Chick-fil-A. So we go get Chick-fil-A, bring it home. My son gets like a chicken nugget kid meal, right? And supposed to have five nuggets, and then he opens it up, six nuggets. He's freaking out. He's excited. I'm like, buddy, it's Holy Week. Miracles are happening everywhere, all right? Because this is the week where miracles, this is the week that miracles become real. This is the week where we realize how fundamentally possible it is for these impossible, wondrous moments to occur. Because that's what we celebrate on Easter, is this idea that the thing that we thought is impossible actually becomes possible in every sense of the words. Because here is how Easter morning began 2,000 years ago. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. Remember how he had told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." They remembered his words. And when they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up, ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away wondering to himself what had happened. This is Easter. This is when the impossible thing happens. This is when we realized what resurrection was going to mean. This is when we realized what the cross was going to mean. And it's this fascinating thing because, like, the cross itself has become this, like, synonymous symbol throughout all of our culture. It's just laced through everything that we see and experience, so much so that I think, like, we've gotten to a point where we didn't even quite recognize how important the cross is and how often we encounter it. Like, you look at, like, any famous movie, any famous TV show, any famous book or anything like that that has this, like, heroic figure that has this sacrificial moment. I'm talking, like, Harry Potter in book 7. I'm talking, like, Neo at the end of The Matrix. I'm talking, like, Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Like, all these points when this person lays down their life to save the world. The craziest thing about that is that's such a trope in our day-to-day now that we think it's like kind of this old played-out storyline. That storyline never existed before Jesus. There's not a single record in human history where somebody wrote a story where a person died for the salvation of the entire world until it literally happened. We forget about the fact that, like, when we see hospital logos, we see hospital signs, we see healthcare signs, how often there's a cross in the middle of it. And that's just become, like, for us, like, oh, that's the symbol of the hospital, ignoring the fact that the reason it's a symbol for the hospital is because the early Christians were the ones that started hospitals. Because they were trying to take the healing that occurred on the cross and actually take it into the world. The cross has become this thing that has these ramifications. And sometimes I don't think we actually embrace just how far those ramifications go. And my favorite example of this literally comes from the movie Cars. And I brought a picture of it because I want to prove myself here for a second. Okay, so that car right there, everybody knows who that is. That's the Popemobile, right? Which is particularly funny in the Cars universe because the Popemobile is being driven by, I assume, the Popemobile. And but if there's a Pope in the Cars universe, that means that there is a automotive Roman Catholic Church in the Cars universe. And that means there is an apostolic line of popes all the way back to the car version of Peter, whatever he was, which means that at some point, the car version of Peter watched his Messiah, car Jesus, die on the cross for everybody's sins and transmissions or something along those lines. When we see something that's literally just the Pope, we forget that the Pope actually represents the idea that Jesus died on the cross because it kicked off this entire sequence of events that led us to come to church on a Saturday night in Plano, Texas. And yet, in spite of that, blows my mind, Christianity is declining. People are believing less and less about Christianity. And honestly, for me, I believe it's because we've just done a really bad job arguing its importance. Because we argue from a couple of vantage points. We argue the importance and the reality of the resurrection first by things like logic. Well, let me tell you about how historically we know that Jesus existed. And let me talk to you about how the behavior of the disciples was consistent, et cetera, et cetera. And we can use all these historical arguments. And that's great. That's some great, like you know, what happens. But that didn't really ever move people's hearts. Or we'll make an argument of like, well, listen, if you start to really live a life for Christ, do you understand what your life could become? And that's a great how-to guide. That's a great self-help book. But that's not necessarily going to be the thing that's going to transform people's minds. Those things are important. Don't get me wrong. Like, how we know that the resurrection happened is critical. And like, Arthur's literally doing a lecture on this in like a week and a half where he's going to walk through the historical accuracy of why we know the resurrection actually did happen. And how we live out our faith, also critically important. But all of that only matters insofar as we understand why Jesus got on the cross. Because this is what we did last night with Good Friday, is we talked about the fact that Jesus chose to get up on the cross. And bluntly, he chose to get up on the cross because each and every one of us has had a moment at some point in our lives where we reach the depths of darkness. Where we reach this point where we are just broken, where we are sad, where we don't feel like there is a way out. Like I remember right after college, I had this whole dream of what life was going to look like. And bit by bit, piece by piece, it started breaking apart. And I'm getting angry. I'm getting angry at my family. I'm getting angry at my friends. I'm getting angry at God. And I'm finding myself breaking away from my parents. I completely stopped talking to my own father. I begin to completely ignore my friends who are reaching out to connect with me. I move away from everybody that I knew, and that's how I end up here in Dallas. And now I'm up in Dallas completely by myself, and the only thing that I'm actually accomplishing is actually figuring out how to spiral further and further into sadness and darkness and depression, and there is no good that's actually coming from any of it. But for some of you, it's the cancer diagnosis. For some of you, it's the job loss. For some of you, it's the fear that you aren't good enough. The remarkable one for me, and I've had so many of these conversations lately with people at St. Andrew, where there are men and women here who are coming from homes when they were children with parents who honestly broke them. Mentally and emotionally, and they were raised in a way where they look back and they go, I don't actually understand what a family is supposed to be. I don't understand what the image of a parent is supposed to be. I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. And even decades later, they're still just grappling with this. And the most incredible thing of this is in every one of those instances, no matter how bad that darkness gets, no matter how bad that pit gets, it doesn't end there. What I know about this is that there are two fundamental truths, and that is that even in our darkest moments, we don't stay in the darkness. We find a way to laugh again. We find a way to find joy again. We find a way where we come out on the other side. And there's a lot of things that we'll attribute it to. We'll attribute it to like, well, you know, I had great community around me. We'll attribute it to just, you know, the passage of time providing us healing. But what I know deeply is in fact that it's the second truth, which is that it was Christ on the cross that showed us a way out of it. It was Christ on the cross that showed us that it was possible to leave that darkness and to find a sunrise. Because as much as he sat with us in the brokenness and the darkness of Good Friday, as much as he sat with us in the heartache, he did it because he loved us so much as to not let us stay there. He did it so that there would be a grace that would just move our hearts in ways that we could never possibly move on our own, so that we might experience joy, so that we might experience love once again. And he did this not just for people who proclaimed he was God, but he did it for every single person. And this is my issue when I think about the fact that there are so many people who are arguing that, you know, Christianity isn't legitimate and I don't need to follow Christ, because usually it comes from a vantage point of, well, let's pretend like this God person actually is real. You're telling me that this all-powerful God is so needy and so desperate that he's going to force me to love him, or he's going to punish me for eternity. I don't want to worship a God like that. And I just want to look at them and go, great, we don't. I don't want to worship a God like that either. Because the truth is that God didn't do it in order for us to be guilted into loving him. God did not get up on that cross and perform the miracle that saw us out of the darkness for his own edification. Because in every step of the way while Jesus was walking this earth, he had opportunity after opportunity to ascend to some throne. He had opportunity after opportunity to grasp at power and to force people into his submission. And he never once did it. And so it doesn't make sense all of a sudden that he's going to want that mentality after his own resurrection. No, he did it so that we could experience life. He did it so that he could see a sunrise on this earth again. He did it so that we might have fulfillment. He did it because this was always the plan from the beginning. Because in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah 53, which we read the beginning of over the course of Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday, it ends here, where it says, after he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. After he suffered, he'll see the light of life and he will be satisfied. It's that moment at the end of like every phenomenal like action movie, every epic adventure, where that hero, the main character, just looks out over all the people that have been saved and they're just happy because they know what they accomplished. But a better analogy, in fact, is that moment when a parent watches their child walk across the stage at graduation, and they think back to the decades of sacrifice that they put in and thought, I would do it again. This is Christ looking on the world on Easter morning and saying, it was all worth it. That's why he chose it. That's why he chose the cross. When we look at Good Friday, we look at the immense pain that he endured. We look at the suffering that he endured. It was worth it. That's why he would choose it. Because he saw this ending. He saw the possibility for a sunrise on the darkness. He saw the possibility that you and I could find a pathway out of our own brokenness, out of our own sin, out of our own darkness and pain and anguish. He saw it. It's why he did it for every single person, because he loved us that much. That's why he did it for people, even if they reject him. That's why he did it for people, even if they don't recognize him, even if they don't want to give him credit, even if they don't want to acknowledge him. That's why he did it, because it was that immense amount of love, because he saw it was possible for the sun to rise again. He saw that it was possible to take the brokenness, to take the sin, and to make something beautiful from it. Because make no mistake, you can take brokenness and make beauty. I learned this back in, I guess it was like 2017, 2018 or so. My wife and I, at the time we were engaged, and we went on this trip to Germany. And we went on this trip to Germany because we were chaperoning a group of 10th grade AP World History students. And remember, jealousy is a sin, okay? So it was a great trip, but not the Germany trip that you're probably thinking it could have been. So in that, though, we got to experience a graffiti tour. And the reason we got to experience a graffiti tour is because in Berlin, it's one of the great hotbeds of graffiti in the entire world. Graffiti artists come from all over the world in order to do art there in the city of Berlin. And so we got to go with these artists, and they showed us around the city, and then they took us to their workshop, and they taught us and these kids how to do graffiti. And it was one of the coolest experiences of our lives. And I brought a picture of it, because I'm going to show you. It's something I'm like really immensely proud of. But in this, so this is the art that my wife and I did. My wife did a graffiti art of Mahatma Gandhi, right? And I did graffiti art of Tupac. So you could say that we both chose great influential leaders of the 20th century. And but there was a moment where like I messed up what I was doing. I messed up the painting that I was doing, and I take it to the guy, and I'm like, hey, can I have like a new board? Like, I screwed this up, and like, I want to make a new one. And he goes, no, man. That's part of your art now. Now you get to figure out how to actually turn that into something that you're so proud of. So go get back to work. And it now sits in my office, because I'm so immensely proud of this idea that I learned from a graffiti artist in Berlin, that it is possible for God to take our mistakes, to take our brokenness and redeem them and make them good again. And that is the most amazing and wonderful thing, because for me, what I often lose sight of in this world is this idea that God is not trying to come into here and to erase our sin. God is not trying to come in and erase our past. God is not trying to make us forgo the things that we have been through and the brokenness that we carry. God is going to actually use that brokenness. He's going to use that darkness in such a way that it becomes a part of our redemption story. Where when we move on to the next chapter, we don't wipe the entire slate clean. We bring it with us, and God says, and look how we made something beautiful out of that as well. Because what you thought was the lowest moment of your life, I'm going to turn it into a moment that when you look back, you think, I am so grateful that God did something beautiful with it. It didn't justify it. It didn't mean that God caused it, but it did mean that God looked at that and said, yeah, I can turn that into a masterpiece also. That is why I chose the cross. So that when you're on the other side of it, I can look down and say it was worth it. This is Easter. This is the story of what we get to do. And the question for us now is to ask ourselves, how do we honor that sacrifice? How do we honor the cross? How do we look at the fact that God has done something so immensely, profoundly impossible, that beauty came from it? I think to all of those parents that I've met here at St. Andrew who think back to their own parent and their own childhood, and they think like, I don't understand how it came from that. I don't understand what a family can look like. And now all of a sudden they have started to build this beautiful life where they have become the parents they never knew they needed, because Christ has showed them a way of what an actual parent will do and the lengths to which a parent will go. He redeemed their story and made beauty from it. And when we live into it, that is how we honor the sacrifice of Christ. And so the challenge for us today is that if you are in this moment where you're sitting in the darkness, I want you to know that it doesn't end there. It doesn't. I don't know when, I don't know how, and I promise you this church and that God will sit with you as long as that darkness needs to take until he can show you the way out. But for every one of the rest of us who are sitting in this moment and we're looking at our own past, the challenge for us is, how are we going to honor the sacrifice? What are we going to do in which God is able to look at us and to say, it was worth it? This week, what I want you to do is I want you to do something where God looks down and goes, can you believe it? I want God to look down and to say, can you believe that this father took time out of his workday in order to go home and have a tea party with his daughter because he never had a parent do that for him? I want God to look down and be like, can you believe that there is a husband who has gone and bought flowers for his wife even though they're estranged? Can you believe that this man has made the choice that he's going to go out and he's going to buy food for somebody who is in need because he has the ability to? Can you believe that there is a bunch of people who've gathered together in Plano, Texas in order to praise the name of Christ? Can you believe the incredible things that they are doing? That's why I did it. That's why it's worth it. This week, this year, as we go from Easter, let us go from this place inspired, knowing that God has redeemed our stories and that, more importantly, we get to prove him right. When he says it was worth it, we get to prove him right. Go from this place showing him that he was right, that your story lives on from now through eternity. He was right. It was worth it.